Hey everyone, welcome back to Behind the Science of Career Development, the podcast for the Asia Pacific Career Development Association. I am your host, Dr. Brian Hutchison, aka the Global Career Guy, and we are using this podcast platform to continue to explore the conversations and practices in the field of career development that we need to be most useful and helpful to the clients that we serve. I'm really excited today. I decided to branch out because I had a bit of an epiphany. I was doing some background reading just on the profession in general, and I realized that I have trained quite a few social workers. I have worked with quite a few social workers in the field of career development, yet I rarely hear us talk about social work as career development professionals in our communities in the way that we do practice. So I did a little research. 128 countries recognize social work as a profession. And I thought I need to get some social work expertise on this podcast. And so I'm really excited today to do a bit of a panel episode. I have two career development professionals who work with social workers. And so I'd like to, first of all, thank Amber Brown and Jennifer Luna for joining me today. Just both say hi to everyone.
Hi, everyone.
I was wondering, like, were your mute button stuck for a second? So going one at a time, Amber, I met you first. So if I can go to Amber, could you introduce yourself to the audience the way that you would like to be known?
Yeah. So hello, everybody. I am Amber Brown. My pronouns are she and her. And I work for the Brown School at Washington University in St. Louis. I am in the Office of Career Services doing career work with social workers, public health professionals, and also social policy makers. So I am very excited to be here today.
Excellent, excellent. And how about you, Jennifer? Please introduce yourself.
My name's Jennifer Luna, and I'm a MSSW, Master of Science in Social Work. I got the extra S. And I work at the Steve Hicks School of Social Work at the University of Texas at Austin. And I've been doing this for 27 years and work with social workers from many different fields and our alumni as well. And I'm so happy to be here with y'all today.
Excellent. Well, I guess to kick it off, and I think I have a lot of ideas about social workers and what they're trained to do and what they might do initially professionally, but I realize I may not be correct. So could we talk a little bit about when a student selects into a social work program, what's sort of the framework that they are trained in and what is it that they're trained to do?
A lot of the students come to social work because either they've run into a social worker growing up or have had exposure to a social worker, or they've had an epiphany, kind of like you did, Brian, where they've decided to come back to school and, you know, they really want to give back. And in terms of training, I think the foundation of our work is really, or what makes us different from counselors or ed psych or other professions, is that we really take a systems approach, which means we look at the individual, but we also look at their community, their families, where they work, their jobs, and we take a strengths-based perspective. And so always looking to start where the client is and bring out the strengths in their challenges.
I will definitely echo everything Jennifer just says. As a counselor working with social workers, I always have to remind them that I am their cousin. I am familiar with what they do, but I definitely come from a different perspective. But I will definitely agree that the majority of what I hear of people that come into social work is, I want to help. And whatever that help looks like can go from different levels, from micro to macro and meso, however they see it. I always tell them that social work is where people are. So if as long as you have people, you can have social work.
Yeah. And that's so like, I tend to be a natural systems thinker, but was trained in the field of counseling and counselor education. So most of the models, we would touch on like family systems or ecological models, but never as a primary sort of focal point. But now I work at a private practice in St. Louis as a clinical director. We employ both counselors and social workers in the same positions. And as those two thought patterns come together, I think that there's a lot of richness there. So as career development professionals then, like, do you tend to use more like ecological, like I think of like Mary Mann's ecological models and things like that? Is that how you approach the work with students?
Much more as a strength-based therapist in a way with my students, because I guess I did the strengths finder and individualization is my top one. And so I'm very excited to learn what gets a person going, what their values are, and what they feel they have a skill set for. And then we talk about what types of industries or positions or just geographical locations in some cases will work the best for the skills that they have, that they've gained over the years and that they've added to the toolkit.
Yeah. And so now I'm super interested for Jennifer, who's trained as a social worker, to hear your answer to that question.
That's so interesting what you just said, Amber, because I just became a Clifton Strengths certified coach. And after all these years, I finally feel like I found my people. I mean, my people are social workers, but, you know, it's kind of different being a social worker and a career coach, because generally you're working with counselors or people who've taken the International Coaching Federation certification. And so I had done the assessment a long time ago, and my number one was woo. And, but I really enjoy using that perspective with our students and even working in teams and groups, because I feel it's so important for social workers to be able to embrace their individual skills and strengths. And in terms of branding, because our profession kind of has a negative connotation to our reputation, it's so important for us to be able to be on the same page and articulate all the different skills that we employ, and not get ahead of that brand, as opposed to having the society brand us.
I totally agree with that, because most people don't realize how broad social work is, because we were saying this earlier, that it's just most people, when they think of a social worker, they think of a person that works with kids, or they think of a person that works with families, and they think of like child protection services, and they're going to take my kids away. And there's social work is so much more than that. You could be in any profession, you could be in any field, for-profit, nonprofit, government, you name it, a social worker can be there.
Yeah, and so you're describing what 21st century career development is, right? It's about skills and transferable skills, and not the role you were trained for. And we could have the same conversation about people with coaching credentials and backgrounds, the same conversation about people with counseling training and background, same people with vocational psychology training and background, and in our field too, human resources and development. And that's sort of like the most common sort of slate, I guess, of professional categories that all interconnect and do this kind of work. How would you describe, like, so if I'm considering those five types of careers, right? I want to help people. I know I want to be engaged in these systems and in these communities. How do you describe social work as a training program as compared to others, so that students or professionals might know what they're opting into?
Well, I would highlight the fact that social workers are licensed professionals, mm-hmm. and follow a code of ethics. And we do provide the most mental health services of all the other helping professions. However, again, I go back to the branding, because oftentimes when social workers begin say, private practice, they begin marketing themselves as therapists. And then you don't really know what the background is. So in terms of the difference, if a social worker wanted to do therapy, that is a clearly laid out path. However, if they wanted to do many other things, those paths are paved as well through, you know, policy classes, macro social work. There's researchers, there's lobbyists, there's corporate social work now. So there's a lot of other options aside from just the direct practice work.
And I would say that you can definitely see that in the curriculum that we have at the Brown School. We have like 8 different concentrations, 5 different specializations that, and then of course you have the individualized where you can create your own in a way. And they vary in all the different places that Jennifer just identified. I mean, the biggest one being mental health. The next one is social and economic development, both domestic and internationally. You have global health, you have health policy. You have all these different places that that social workers can find themselves. You have violence, injury prevention, sexual education, so many different places that you can be. And I mean, the sky's the limit in most cases. And it's all about branding. It's all about how you transfer those skills over. It's all about how the language that you use and to make sure that if we call it evidence-based research, right? Everyone throws that word around all the time. But in essence, it's all about gathering data, right? It's all about doing data analysis, or it's all about doing evaluation. And so you might not say evidence-based research when you're talking to a for-profit institution. You might just say, hey, I know how to do evaluation work. I know how to do business analytics. And so it's all about transferring the skills that you're learning from, especially the social work education, into the language that the other professions are more familiar with.
So just, I do have a couple more sort of training questions before we transition, but so one of the lines or descriptors that I see is a social work program versus a clinical social work program. I think it would be really helpful for the audience to know what that difference means in reality.
I was hoping you were gonna touch on that, Brian. So most social work programs have 2 tracks, and one is a clinical track, and then the other is a macro track. So the clinical track is more the direct practice, counseling, therapeutic track, and macro is more of the skills that Amber just described, like policy, research, program development. And then now we have other sub-concentrations too, like, you know, an MBA and social work combined, or public policy and social work, or law school and social work. So, you know, that's kind of breaking it down even further. And Amber can talk about they have a great health policy and social work program at Brown School that I think is very popular among social work students.
You are exactly right. So there's the one thing that the Brown School has that is unique to the Brown School, like I mentioned earlier, is a lot of options for students that want to get trained and get ready for the world of work. One of those is the sexual health specialization. I think we're the only school that has that as an option for social workers to learn all about. They can start taking the courses to get certified before they even finish graduation. So you have that. You have a management specialization, a social entrepreneurship specialization, and a brand new concentration called social impact leadership, which prepares social workers for leadership opportunities. And so we're really about showcasing the versatility of the degree as not just a clinician, but we can still use those interpersonal skills that you learn as a clinician. So building relationships, understanding that that person has their lived experiences and their perspectives and that it's true to what they know. Networking, all those things that you learn as a clinician, and listening, I forgot that one, active listening, gotta have that one in there. You can transfer all that over to being a great leader. Because when you survey people, they go, how do you define a great leader? It's a person who listens to their team, that's able to have an open door policy and is able to communicate effectively. And all those skills I just said that you learn as a clinician, are the same skills that you can be as a great leader. Mm-hmm. And so it's a no-brainer. Social workers can go there too.
So if a student, I love this array of programs and the way that you're describing them. And in each one of them, I could see a student in one of these tracks thinking, and I'd really like to focus with a specialization in career development. How would a student in either of your programs or in general in a social work program be able to focus on having career development as an aspect of their career coming out of a program?
Well, when I first graduated with my bachelor's in social work, I went and worked at a treatment center, and it was with women. It was, you know, many years ago when insurance would pay for you to be in treatment, you could be in treatment for a year, 18 months. And one aspect of my job was to do a 1-hour group with the residents who were about to transition out. And it was a job development group. And so I was able to help them with resumes, interviews, what to wear, how to look for a job. And that was my favorite part of my job. And it was maybe 5%. And then I went on to graduate school, and I really thought I was going to do something like substance abuse policy or working on recidivism or something along those lines that had to do with substance abuse. And then this job came up at the school that was to coordinate career services. And I just remembered, I like to think of careers in terms of career moments. Mm-hmm. And I just remembered at that moment how much I loved that work. And even though I had done all this work in graduate school towards a goal, that I flipped a switch and I, applied for the job and got it and never, ever, regretted my career move. And now that I've worked with other social workers who are doing career development, the skills are completely transferable. And, everybody, I want to say everybody kind of has the same problems, right? Mm-hmm. And so, the way that you approach your work, or if you're unemployed, like what defines you, regardless of whether, you're having, major life challenges or you're just graduating from college. And social workers are really great at helping people to define what the problem is or the issue, and then how to take a plan forward, set goals, and meet those goals. So to me, it's a natural career fit.
Yeah. And if I can just say, my late colleague, John Krumbholz, would have just jumped for joy and said something pretty amazing with the way that you just described those career moments. One of the things I've been saying for a while now is, particularly in the clinical side, which is where I work, is that we just tend to put our blinders on and don't see that improved life circumstances, wellness, and mental health, the biggest bang for a client's life happens outside of clinical settings. Like change a bad relationship, change an unsafe community, change their work environment, give them employment, are much bigger positive outcome factors from therapy than what happens in the clinical hour. And you really see that, and I've worked some in St. Louis in all of those areas, right? You see that with previously incarcerated clients. You see that with people leaving abuse situations, the type of program that you worked in. Clinical work's important, but the job is just as important, if not more, because of timing out of program. Same things when I worked with the International Institute in St. Louis, right? You have if you're a refugee, you have a finite amount of time living on poverty wages to be eligible to work and support yourself. Sorry, you got me all excited. Like for me, mental health and wellness always comes first, but it's hard to have it in today's world if you don't consider career concerns. Whew, I love this.
I mean, as you're talking, of course, the one thing that everyone that comes to mind is Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Mm-hmm. In order to get to a career thing, you have to make sure you have security, you have safety, you have food, you have all these basic needs, right? And then we can start talking about career. And I will say that, that's one thing that I've used my counseling education towards, is to really identify, okay, what is going on with this student? What is going on with this alum? Mm-hmm. Where are they stuck? Is there some other barrier that's keeping them from getting to where they need to go? And I will say, Jennifer, I totally agree with you with the starting point of most people is usually some kind of workforce development or some kind of, hey, let's get you back into the workforce type of, I guess, position. And I don't know, the theory that comes to mind is the social cognitive career theory that comes to mind, where it talks about, hey, this is what you want to do. What barriers are there that are in the way of where you want to go? How do we remove those barriers? And that's social work, right? Yeah. When you think about it, especially using an equity lens and using a social justice lens. I learned that in my counseling education, but as I'm talking to social workers, I'm like, oh, that's the same thing you guys are doing. Okay. And so I don't know, I love seeing that where there's like a full circle moment and you're like, yes, I see why we like you. I see why we are in the same space together.
I was just going to say one other thing that comes to mind is, you know, when you work at a university and you do career services, or even if you're doing it, you know, if you're coaching, it's usually insurance doesn't cover coaching, right? So it's very rare. Well, oftentimes people will think, oh, that's a cushy social work job. You're in a university setting. You're like a professor. But really, it's very rare that a student comes in and is jumping for joy because they're about to graduate and they get to find a job. They are usually not in a great place. There's anxiety at the minimum, but there can also be, a lot of issues around finances and where am I going to live? And I don't really know how to articulate my skills. And all of that at the core is really counseling or social work. Although I would never call myself a clinical social worker, I think that a lot of the issues are the same. We just approach it differently.
Anxiety, depression, all those things come up. And then of course the newer term that everyone's been using recently is imposter syndrome, right? Especially coming, if you went straight through to your MSW and you haven't worked yet, and you were like, hey, I want to go into this profession. You're just like, oh, wait, I'm actually going into this profession. Am I ready? Oh, no, I'm not ready yet. And so it's a lot of coaching for me, for my students, is letting them know that they are enough, that this degree has prepared them for a lot of what they're going to see, and they're not alone. In most cases, you have a supervisor, right, that is there to help you through. And I love that. My office in particular, we help them even after they graduate, no charge. We just say, hey, we're here for you for life, come talk to us. And so then them knowing that usually makes them feel a little bit better. Like I'm not by myself, but it's a bit switch from being a student and then all of a sudden now you're a professional.
I always think that's so interesting because I think we both come from pretty large universities. And one of the things that I've seen is that most social work career services do see their alumni free of charge. And a lot of the big programs that have huge career offices, you know, like in liberal arts or business or engineering, they charge their alumni. And I feel like, you know, there we go again, taking the strengths-based perspective. And, but it's all, you know, it's so important. It really behooves us to do that, because then we can share their stories with our students. And I think it's such a great honor to be able to serve somebody who's been out of school, you know, 10, 20 years. I've even had alumni come to talk to me about retirement plans and how they could still stay involved in the profession.
So I think we've done a great job of being strength-based people in this conversation, because I really do think that we've loaded in a lot of the nuance and a lot of the sort of unknown things that people have in their minds about social work. But before we move on, I just want to touch base because I know there are a lot of sort of negatives or myths that people might associate. Amber, you had mentioned that, you know, a social worker is there to take your child away. Can we just spend a couple of minutes maybe cleaning up any myths or misinformation that's out there that the two of you would like to address before we talk about the future?
So, yeah, I mean, most of the time when you talk to someone, they go, hey, I'm a social worker or I work with social workers. The first thing they think about is, oh, those are the people that work with kids, or those are the people that do therapy, or, oh, you can't trust them because they will report stuff on you or whatever. Mm-hmm. I would say that that's the biggest myth that I've heard, that social workers can only do that type of work. And as I'm hoping that you've gathered to this point in this episode, is that social workers are very versatile. Mm-hmm. Social work is a profession, is so broad, and you can find yourself in anywhere. I mean, I have some social workers that have graduated from the Brown School that are in tech. I have some social workers that are in communications and design. Yeah. I mean, of course, we have them in the boardrooms doing business. And then, of course, we have people that are out there advocating and doing policy work. So, I mean, yeah, that's the biggest myth, I would say, is out there.
And I think we see that in a lot of jobs, right, where the role is confused with the career identity, right? That this one experience I've had, you know, I used to be a school counselor called guidance counselors when I was coming up. That's another perfect example of, in some systems, the school counselor is a disciplinarian, does bus duty and lunch duty. But that's not the design of that role. That just happens to be, or I'm sorry, of that career, that job, that just happens to be the role in a given system because of how the system is run and managed. It's the same thing with Child Protective Services. I've worked in counseling in several states, and people have one experience with Child Protective Services, and then they think that's the way that that system always works. And I have personally seen Child Protective Services protect children more positively more often than things have gone poorly. And in my experience, usually when they go poorly, it's because of the laws of that state, not the actual protective service worker. So I think all careers need better branding, better public information, better communication about what we do, because we leave consumers or citizens or whatever we want to say to make judgments based on one unique individual experience that's going to stand out because our brains are oriented more to negative memories than positive memories.
I was just going to say, I think the biggest myth that I see is that we're low paid, and that we will always be low paid, that we chose a noble profession, and that it's not okay to negotiate salaries or to advocate for ourselves. And this is a myth that I would just love to break. It's kind of become the most important part of my mission. This last leg of my career is really helping social workers to advocate for themselves, and, you know, in every job offer, to get something. Maybe it's not more salary, hopefully it is, but additional certifications, or you know, supervision covered, or professional development, conference fees, but it doesn't have to be a low paid career. And unless we do something about it, it will always be like that.
Thank you so much for mentioning that, Jennifer. I don't know why people think that when you work with people or work in social services that you can't make money. I mean, why? Why would you even think that? I mean, if I'm going to help people, then I need to be able to be stable myself. Because if I'm worried about how I'm going to get my next meal, mm-hmm. how am I going to help my clients, right? Part of me feels like that is a direct violation of ethics, but, you know, that's my thought. But, I mean, I know that NASW, the National Association for Social Workers, I know they've been trying their best to lobby and to change that at a more higher level, so that we can get our salaries, especially for the beginning social worker that's not fully licensed yet. That's the spot where the lowest incomes are. And so, I mean, I know in the 6 years or 7 years I've been in this business, and I haven't been in as long as Jennifer, we have seen at least a $5,000 increase in national salaries. It keeps going, but it needs to get higher.
And in my experience, there's an interesting, system quirk there in both counseling and social work, where the graduate training programs show a bias towards low-paid agency work versus private practice, which I coordinate an internship program at a large private practice in St. Louis. I've worked with schools that won't allow their social work or counseling students to be placed in a private practice for their internship and practicum trainings, where the money is. And so the clinical side is often directed to grant-based, low-paid, agency-based work as their initial clinical experience, which is great work, but in aggregate is more lower paid. And so I think there's also some system work there that we can do as higher education professionals too. Last sort of meta topic that I want to transition to is sort of the projection into the future. I know that much like counseling, coaching, there is the chaos that we see in the 21st century world of work is creating a lot of opportunities to chart your own path, to do entrepreneurial things, to have multiple options in front of you that you can choose between to pursue. What are some of the trends the two of you are seeing into the future for social work professionals?
One of the trends that we're seeing in Austin, Texas, but I think that this is going to be reflective of the whole country, is work in diversity and inclusion. And we've seen a tremendous increase in jobs in this area. And in the past, when I would see postings for, say, a diversity and inclusion officer or director, they were looking for people with human resources background, or maybe somebody who is specialized in that particular field. But now, when I see them, and many of them are in corporate settings, they are calling specifically for a social worker to do that work. So that has been, and we're perfectly trained to do that work, which is awesome. And that has been really refreshing to see a natural transition into a corporate setting or a different setting, as opposed to, you know, this social worker just got lucky and got a job at Tesla.
Yes, I was going to say the same thing, Jennifer, that DEIA work, so diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, is where I see a lot of my social workers going into for the same reasons that Jennifer highlighted. Another spot I think I've seen them go into more is policy, because that is a direct avenue into community and improving communities. So that could be policy at either the state, county, city, or federal level. I've definitely seen social workers there and people actually looking for social workers. I'm not sure if this is a trend, but I know that I was just approached by a local police department looking for social workers to become police officers. So I know there was a trend of social workers tagging along with police officers, but now they are actively looking for social workers to be the police officers. So again, not sure where that's going to go. That seems like a newer trend, but people are recognizing that social workers can be in more places and more settings than we originally thought.
Do you see interest in either of your programs from international students coming from other countries to do social work programs? And any insight on sort of differences between the U.S. context and maybe other international contexts?
Yes, we do. It's interesting because there are, I think the U.S. and a few other countries have, you know, licensing and pretty formulated curriculum to the path of social work, whereas there's other countries that don't have that yet. And so we see, particularly in our doctoral program, students who come in to get a PhD in social work in order to take that knowledge back to their country.
And yes, for my program as well, we specifically have partnerships with international institutions to bring over their students to do social work degrees. Most of those partnerships are in China. We also have some partnerships within Africa and other nations as well, and countries as well. But I will say the biggest challenge that our international students have when they come here for social work is they don't have enough time because of OPT requirements to finish out their clinical hours, because they usually, the OPT is only good for a year or 12 months. And typically you need to do 2 years to finish out to get to have enough supervision hours or hours within the field to qualify for your clinical training. Mm-hmm. So that would be the biggest challenge. The other one is if they do decide to go back home, in some countries, they don't know what social work is. Right. And so it's really hard trying to communicate, oh, social work is this, but they've never had anything. They're like, oh, do you mean it's like medicine? Well, kind of. Is it like human resources? Well, sort of. Yeah. It's just really hard trying to translate that. So that's usually what I'm, asked to do, is to help them figure out what is closest to that work in their country and how they can actually, you know, translate that over. Yeah. But I mean, I would say the OPT part is very hard when students are here.
And I just want to make sure for the listeners, can you say what OPT means?
Because yes, not everyone may know. Make sure I have it right. Optional practical training. OPT is a term that you will use during immigration, where you have CPT and OPT. CPT is curriculum practical training that you use during your degree. And OPT is training that you do after your degree. Typically is 1 year, unless you're in a STEM program and you get an option to extend up to 3 years. And so with that time, you get to work full-time, 40 hours a week, just like any other domestic student. You have a card and it's like, yes, I can work in the United States. And unfortunately, unless they get sponsorship or a road towards what's called H-1B, it's hard for them to continue to get those clinical hours to also get their clinical license so they can take that back.
Yeah.
The other part I think Jennifer alluded to as well was that if they do go back, they don't have the same foundation as we do in the United States with, these are our ethics, this is international law, this is what you should be doing as a social worker, and all those little things that we already have built up in this country. I know there's an international council that talks about social work, but it's not in every location. So that's the hard part too.
Yeah. And I know that APCDA, who sponsors this podcast, has done a lot of that work around ethics and a common language glossary specific to the career development. So I'm aware of how much effort that takes to find common ground for international coalitions as well. So as we wrap up, I want to be respectful to everyone's time, but give you each just a couple more minutes if you want to check in. This has been so robust and I think will be so informative for our listeners. Are there any unspoken things or thoughts that you think are important to add? And maybe I'll turn it over to Jennifer. What would you like to say before we part ways for this episode?
I was just thinking again about the non-traditional roles that social workers play and why this is such an exciting time for career development in social work. We've seen a growing number of social workers that are working in sports from many different levels. It's fascinating. I think it's kind of started with the brain injury crisis that was happening a few years ago. But we've seen social workers who do mindfulness with athletes to improve their performance. And then we also see so many issues that professional athletes fall into as they progress into their career, as they retire, depending on the backgrounds that they come from. So that was one. And then another one that I find fascinating is librarian social workers, or social workers who work in libraries, which is kind of a natural place where people go. Sometimes, you know, unsheltered populations go there, families. It's just a great place for social workers to make a difference with a wide range of people.
Yeah. And I'm so happy you brought that up because it goes back to sort of our international audience, right? So even if social work isn't an established profession in a country, you're still learning all of those skills to take with you. And so with proper career development help, there's still going to be work for you in your home country or in the country you want to go to based on how you present those skills, because they're so needed in many different paradigms of work and community and in life. Yeah. Amber, how about you? How would you like to end your time with us today?
I guess I would like to say that I really enjoyed my time here. And I do also want to bring into the room that Jennifer and I are on a common association. The association is called the Consortium for Career Development in Social Work Education. And we are an national association within the United States of career development professionals that work with social workers at all levels, from bachelor's degree all the way up to PhD, and of course there are alums. And so if anyone is interested to learn more about going into career development, have a great network of people that are fun, but we get the job done, please consider looking us up in the internet, the CCDSWE. Our website is socialwork.net, I believe. I'll get it right. I'll give it to you later.
It'll be in the show notes.
Yay. So well, okay, you can do that for
me. And it's a great place for anybody who is, many of us are social workers in the group. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful learning environment because we learn from those colleagues that are counselors, that are career professionals and social workers. And we would welcome more members.
Awesome.
I have the correct website. I'll give it to you now. Socialworkcareers.net.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I think I said at the beginning of the episode that a purpose of this podcast is to seek out some of the career conversations that we're not having in the field of career development. And I think this certainly has been one that's important, that's fresh, and that's going to give a lot of people a connection to the field of social work and view you all as career development professionals along with us. So on behalf of my guest, Amber Brown, Jennifer Luna, this is Brian Hutchison signing off from episode 15 of Behind the Science.